In this episode of the St. Philip Institute podcast, we're going to take a look at the liturgy of the Passover from Exodus chapter 12 and show you how it connects with the celebration of the Eucharist, especially in light of Holy Thursday. Please enjoy. Welcome to the St. Philip Institute podcast, where we explore the sources of the Catholic faith, including the scriptures, the documents of the Church, the teachings of the Second Vatican Council, and the lives and witness of the saints. St. John Paul II often said, "Duc in altum," set out into deep waters. And our goal here at the podcast is to help you do just that. We don't want to merely provide you with information. Instead, we seek to help you achieve a true transformation and to respond to the Lord's call in your life to live out the universal call to holiness. Hi, welcome back to the St. Philip Institute podcast. My name is Luke Arredondo, and I'm the Director of Faith Formation here at the St. Philip Institute. We are continuing our Lenten series looking at the book of Exodus. And so in this episode, what I really want to discuss is the thing that really holds the Exodus together, and that's the Passover. So we've done a little bit of an introduction to the book of Exodus, talked about Moses's early life and his sort of the revelation of God to him on the mountain, and then his sort of initial commission that he's given to liberate Israel, as he's told the divine name, and that he's going to liberate Israel. We can't go through everything. It's an excellent book, but there's a lot packed in. So the quick, version of things is, after Moses finds out he's supposed to liberate Israel, he isn't sure how it's going to work. God gives him Aaron to help him, and then he's off and sent to Pharaoh to intercede for a period of freedom for worship. And Pharaoh doesn't want to agree with it, doesn't want to go along with it. Eventually, 10 plagues happen, and the last plague is what's finally going to liberate Israel. So that last plague is the death of the firstborn, and the Israelites are given instructions on how to survive, how to not have their firstborn die, and that is to celebrate a special liturgy which came to be called the Passover. So what I want to show you in this discussion is, first of all, the rubrics of that liturgy, what the Israelites were asked to do so that their firstborn did not die, and then really kind of do a theological reflection on how that specific liturgy is tied up with our own celebration of Lent, and in a particular way, Holy Thursday. All right, so we're going to jump in by reading from the book of Exodus chapter 12, where the Israelites are given their instructions for the Passover. And remember, these are the things they're being asked to do so that the angel of death, which is going to kill the firstborn of the Egyptians, will not kill the firstborn of the Israelites. So this is chapter 12 of the book of Exodus. "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, 'This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all of the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, they shall take every man a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then a man and his neighbor next to his house shall take according to the number of persons. According to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs in the evening. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the house in which they eat them. Then they shall eat the flesh that night, roasted with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled with water, but roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts, and you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover, for I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you upon the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall fall upon you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Now that's Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 through 13. I'm going to skip down to verses 21 through 27, which is sort of another summary because there's a couple more details that are put in verses 21 through 27, which will be important. So then Moses called all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Select lambs for yourselves according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood which is in the basin, and touch the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood which is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of this house, of his house, until the morning. For the Lord will pass through to slay the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your house to slay you. You shall observe this rite as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. And when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, as he promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For he has passed over the houses of the sons of Israel in Egypt when he slew the Egyptians, but spared our houses.' And the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the sons of Israel went and did so as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. So they did." All right. A lot of stuff packed in there, and the whole episode is going to be just kind of unpacking that and making sense of and making some observations about some of the specific details. But the key point here for the larger narrative of Exodus is that the book of Exodus is about getting out. The departure, the path away, right? We talked about the meaning of the word Exodus earlier. So the whole goal is to get the Israelites out of slavery, out of Egypt, so that they can worship the Lord as they are called to. But the Exodus itself, that is the leaving, doesn't happen unless you have the Passover first. So without the Passover, which includes both the ritual celebration of the Israelites eating the lamb with the blood on the doorposts and all that stuff, and the death of the firstborn of the Egyptians, the Israelites would not get to leave. So I've talked about this already in earlier episodes, but that fundamental goal of Exodus being about worship is really, really, really critical to this event, because the worship of the Lord, there's a liturgical worship really happening in the sacrifice of the lamb, and that's going to enable the Israelites to flee from the Egyptians so that they can then enter into the promised land, and in the promised land, worship God. So let's look at some of the details, just kind of to summarize and emphasize a couple of things. First, the Israelites are supposed to choose an unblemished lamb, a year old, and it's got to be one per family. Or if the family's too small, or if they can't afford an entire lamb, they can share with their neighbors. But everybody needs to be partaking in the sacrifice of this lamb. The lamb, of course, has to be sacrificed. And that is killed, and there are some explicit directions of how that's supposed to happen. And note this, the sacrifice of an animal is a priestly action in the Old Testament, especially in this stage of the Old Testament. Animal sacrifice is an important part of the worship of the true God. So who does the sacrifice? It's the priest. But the priest at this time was the father of the household. So every household has a father, every household has a priest, and the priest is the one, the father, who offers the sacrifice of this lamb. It's not till later that the priesthood is going to be restricted to just the tribe of Levi. So when the temple liturgy would develop later on and the priesthood would be distinguished from every household to just the Levites, what actually developed is the Israelites would have to go to the temple to have the lamb sacrificed, but then they would take the lamb home and celebrate the rest of the Passover liturgy in the home. It's very interesting that the Passover, which is such a significant part of the identity of the Hebrews, the Israelites, Jewish people, is that it was celebrated even when the temple was around and it hadn't been destroyed yet. Passover involved the temple for just the sacrifice of the lamb, but the meal and the actual stipulations that are laid out here in the book of Exodus happened in the home. So just something interesting about it. So first they got to get a lamb, an unblemished one, a year old, and they have to sacrifice it, and they needed priests to do that. Third, they take the blood of the lamb, and they use a hyssop branch dipped in a basin with blood, and they spread it on the doorposts and the lintel of the house. And this is a sign to the angel not to enter this house, not to kill the firstborn within, because they are part of the Israelites. Something that very frequently gets overlooked is this next step. The Israelites have to eat the lamb. They have to eat the flesh of the lamb and not just use its blood. So the Passover involves the requirement of something you have to do with the body of the lamb and something that you have to do with the blood of the unblemished lamb. And it involves a meal, a sacred meal of eating the flesh of the lamb and then pouring out its blood and using the blood to mark the doorposts and the lintel of the house. So again, take an unblemished lamb, sacrifice it, put the blood on the doorposts and lintel, and then it has to be eaten. And then a fifth point here, the Passover is intended to be a memorial that is perpetual, something that is done forever. This is, you see in particular in that verses from 21 to 27, that a child says, "What do you mean by this service?" Which is, you know, a way of describing the meal. And the answer is, tonight is the Passover of the Lamb. Not that the Passover was a long time ago and we're remembering it, but that it is happening tonight. And the Jewish belief for this Passover ritual, which was celebrated each year both in the temple and then in the families, was that they were participating again somehow in that original Passover, not just looking back on it and remembering it. There was a real sense in which the Passover made present that original event, and that by participating in the liturgy of the Passover, they were in some way, you know, connected to the original event. So they have this very rich sense of a memorial. Now, that Passover forms the central part of the identity of the Israelites, of who they are, It's really critical in Jewish history, right? The people of Israel, after Moses, grew even more. The temple was later built. David ruled over a dynasty. But as sort of the glory of David fades, what people start kind of looking for in, not looking for, but rather turning to and kind of reimagining in the book of Exodus is a new Moses, that what we need is a new Moses and we need a new Exodus. Even though the kingdom of Israel was in some ways greater after Moses, it's Moses' ministry, his intercession on behalf of Israel, the wonders that were worked through Moses, and certainly the Passover liturgy, and then what follows, you know, with the escape from Egypt through the crossing of the Red Sea. All of that becomes sort of in the Hebrew identity, like the core of who they are. And there's an interesting passage in the Catechism that is used to that is used to describe sort of like a Christian look at the Passover in light of the Last Supper. So this is a really, really cool quotation from the Catechism. It's paragraph 1340, and I want you to really, really listen carefully for the way that the Catechism describes the Passover liturgy. This is paragraph 1340 from the Catechism. By celebrating the Last Supper with his apostles in the course of a Passover meal, Jesus gave the Jewish Passover its definitive meaning. Jesus is passing over to his Father by his death and resurrection. The new Passover is anticipated in the supper and celebrated in the Eucharist, which fulfills the Jewish Passover and anticipates the final Passover of the church in the glory of the kingdom. Let me read that one more time. By celebrating the Last Supper with his apostles in the course of the Passover meal, Jesus gave the Jewish Passover its definitive meaning. So take a step back. The Passover is really the central identity of the Israelites. And here the church is saying, because Jesus chose, and it wasn't an accident, he chose to celebrate his Last Supper during a Passover meal, it gives the Jewish Passover its definitive meaning. The meaning, in other words, is being configured or transfigured, rather raised up. It was already such an important event. The Israelites did not lose the firstborn. The Egyptians did. Pharaoh changes his mind and asks the Israelites to leave because the firstborn died in Egypt, but not in Israel. And Pharaoh says, kind of, all right, get out of here. That's incredible. It is one of the biggest wonders of the Old Testament, the biggest miracles that God works on behalf of his people. But here the Catechism is saying, by Jesus instituting the Eucharist at the Last Supper, it gives the Jewish Passover its definitive meaning. So the Eucharist fulfills the Passover of Moses and anticipates the final Passover of the church. So this is really why I think the book of Exodus is so important for us during Lent. Actually, if you go to Mass on Holy Thursday, you will read from the book of Exodus an account from chapter 12, which discusses the Passover. Then you will, in the New Testament selection of readings, you'll hear from the Apostle Paul, who gives us the institution narrative of the Eucharist. And what are we celebrating on Holy Thursday? Holy Thursday is literally called Holy Thursday of the Lord's Supper, right? It is the Mass of the Lord's Supper, where we always celebrate the Eucharist at every Mass, but on Holy Thursday, the Eucharist is really raised up in prominence more maybe than in any other liturgy. We're celebrating the inauguration of the Eucharist and the inauguration of the priesthood. What happens at the end of Holy Thursday? Every parish goes to celebrate adoration. So think of it this way. The Passover frees the Egyptians to get out of Egypt. Now, there's some intermediate chapters between them leaving Egypt and crossing the Red Sea. And during that journey, they begin to receive another gift closely tied up with the Passover, and that is the gift of the manna, which is this miraculous substance that appears on the ground every morning except on the Sabbath. But on the day prior to the Sabbath, a double portion appears. So the Israelites are going on a journey. They are fed by first the flesh of the lamb, and they are saved in a certain way by the blood of the lamb, right? Then they go on a journey, and on that journey they are fed with this miraculous white substance that looks like bread, some sort of, mysterious substance. It's called manna because that's in Hebrew is what is it? They don't recognize it, but it looks like wafers. It's described as looking like wafers and tasting like it was made with honey. Where are the Israelites going? They're going to the Promised Land. The Promised Land is described as a land flowing with milk and honey. So it's a sort of food for the journey from Egypt to the Promised Land. And it is a sort of supernatural, not a sort of, it is a supernatural bread that comes down from heaven every day, except on the Sabbath. And there's also joined with that this flesh of quail. So they're fed supernaturally every day by flesh and bread that rains down from heaven, right? Now, if you're a Catholic and you're listening to this and you think that just sounds sort of familiar, there's something kind of, something that's ringing in my ears, like I think I've heard this story, that's good. And if you don't, I will bring this out for you, right? So the reason that I wanted to really focus on the Passover is because it is central to the Israelite understanding of who they are and their identity. And in salvation history, it's this tremendous moment. But then it becomes something even more because of Christ's use of the Last Supper as his place to institute the Eucharist. And by instituting the Eucharist, he is showing us the full meaning of the Passover, that the Passover had its own meaning, but now it is given even more significance by the way Christ utilizes the Passover Supper in the context of his teaching on the Eucharist. You can see this all also in John chapter 6, which I don't even think I'm really going to get time to go into. Maybe. We may get to discuss John 6, where Jesus is discussing the teaching of eating his body and drinking his blood. And there is a discussion of the manna. He says, your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. Whoever eats my body will have life everlasting. So Jesus purposefully celebrates the Last Supper during the context of a Passover meal. And it's very clear that he intends to celebrate the Passover meal because he is going to inaugurate a new Exodus. The Passover precedes the Exodus, so if we're going to have a new Exodus, and Jesus is acting here as the new Moses, then we need a new Passover, which is the Eucharist. So I want to kind of draw some parallels between Moses' ministry and the experience of the Israelites in the book of Exodus, and what happens with Christians in Jesus' time, and the way that we get to participate in this new Passover today through the Mass. So Moses leads Israel in the first Exodus. The first Exodus is an escape from what? It's an escape from slavery in Egypt. So they're leaving slavery, but they're also leaving Egypt, and their destination is the Promised Land. The Eucharist, though, fulfills the Passover and prepares us for the new Exodus. So all of the steps that are involved in the original Passover are in some way involved in the new Passover. And the new Exodus is related to the old Exodus. So, the first Exodus is a liberation. It's a liberation from slavery in Egypt. The new Exodus that Jesus is inaugurating at the Last Supper is also a liberation. But we're not going from physical slavery. Rather, we're being set free from slavery to sin and slavery to death. So there's a liberation involved in both the original Exodus and the new Exodus. There's a destination in the first Exodus from Egypt into the earthly promised land, Jerusalem. The destination of the new Exodus that Jesus inaugurates is the heavenly promised land, or the new Jerusalem. The Israelites had food on their journey from Egypt to the promised land, and that was the manna and the quail, the bread and flesh that rained down from heaven for them. In the new Exodus, which is going to set us free from sin and death and is a journey to heaven, we have a food for the journey, and it is the Eucharist, which is also a bread from heaven that is flesh. So the Israelites got bread and flesh, two separate things. In the Eucharist, we receive bread from heaven that is God's body. All right, so it's two in one. The original Exodus in the book of Exodus has a leader, Moses, right? Jesus is the new Moses, and we can see this in a particular way in the Gospel of Matthew. that he's acting here in the new Exodus as in the capacity of a new Moses. And there's another little detail here I'd like to add too. In the book of Exodus, Moses is given tremendous blessings to be very close, very intimate with the Lord. He gets to speak to him. He gets to be in his presence. He even gets to see some of the Lord's glory, but not all of it. He sees sort of his back, God's back, right? But he doesn't get to see the face of God. There is a hope for a new Moses, very clearly in the Old Testament, for a new Moses who will see the Lord face to face. And Jesus, as the new Moses, not only sees God face to face, but reveals the face of God through the incarnation, right? So Jesus is very clearly a new Moses. In the original Exodus, there was a group of three priests who had a very important role, very close to Moses. So Moses is the primary leader, and he has Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu. I can get Abihu right, but I get Aaron wrong. That's great. There's a group of three, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, these three priests that worked very closely with Moses. Jesus has his own group of three, Peter, James, and John, who sort of are set apart from the other group. Of course, there are the 12 tribes in both in the original Exodus and then the 12 apostles in the new Exodus. There's even a group of 70 or 72 that are sent out by Moses. You can look in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, where 70 or 72 elders are sent out. And I say 70 or 72 because originally 70 are sent out, but then two more rise up and start prophesying like it's like they were supposed to be with the group. So it's a funny and kind of interesting story. 70 are identified and sent out, and they are you know, prepared by Moses, and they start prophesying, and then two other men just start prophesying in the camp, and they join the 70. So it's either 70 or 72, depending on how you want to count it. This group of elders, though, is commissioned by Moses for a specific purpose to spread, spread the news about the covenant. In the new Exodus, Jesus also sends a group of 70 or 72 elders, and it's 70 or 72, depending on some of the translations you might read. In both cases, they're trying to be faithful to the number that's you see in the book of Numbers. Now, there is also a law given in the first Exodus and the new Exodus, and this is something we really could spend quite a bit of time on just on its own. Moses and the Israelites enter into a very profound covenant with God. It is a big deal that the Lord is liberating them from slavery, and he wants to swear a covenant with Israel and give them special gifts as sort of firstborn of the nations, right? They're the firstborn of all the nations, and they're going to play this important role. And God enters into a covenant with them, and that covenant has rules. And those rules are laid out first in the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments are sort of moral, you know, minimums. That you cannot transgress, or kind of give you some very basics, right? In the new Exodus, Jesus, as it were, gives his own commandments, but it's not 10, it's 8, and they're not commandments, they're beatitudes. And there's this beautiful way of looking at the goodness of the old covenant, which is important and is good, and then how much more challenging and profound Jesus's sort of law of his covenant is, the new and eternal covenant takes shape in the Beatitudes. So in both cases, a mountain is involved. The people are brought to the mountain of Sinai. They ratify the covenant, and then they receive, as a part of that ratification, they receive the commandments. These are how you're going to comport yourselves as the firstborn of the nations. You shall, you know, only have one God, and these all of the commandments, all 10 of them. But how are they given, and where do they come from? Moses has to go up the mountain of Sinai, receive them, and then bring them down and transmit them to the people. In other words, Moses is, you know, he's acting as an intermediary. He doesn't give the law. It's given to him, and he shares it with the people, and they agree to abide by it. In the new and eternal covenant, what's really striking is that Jesus goes to the Mountain of the Beatitudes, right? And a couple of differences. He brings the people with him rather than saying he's going to go up by himself, receive a law, and then bring it back down to them. He brings the people up with him, as it were, challenging them to rise higher than the Israelites did by coming with him. And then he sits and gives the Beatitudes on his own authority. So he is not receiving it and then passing it on. He is merely speaking it. And he is saying in this Sermon on the Mount, in which the Beatitudes are delivered, things like, "You have heard it said, but I say to you." He reveals, as it were, the actual aspirations of the commandments. So the commandments tell us, for instance, not to kill. Jesus wants to say, yes, you shouldn't kill, but really the goal is not just to avoid murder, it's to avoid hatred in your heart. "You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery." Yes, but I want to say to you, if you even have lust in your heart, that is like you have committed adultery in your heart. So Jesus is purifying us beyond the limits of the commandments through the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes are not simple rules that you are just trying not to break, but rather they're sort of guiding us toward almost limitless holiness, right? So what does it mean, for instance, blessed are the poor, or blessed are those who are persecuted for my name's sake? Like, you can't just check that box off. Like, yeah, I didn't do anything terrible, so I guess I am being poor or poor of spirit, or I'm being pure of heart. These are things that are just continuously challenging, and we sort of really never reach the end of it. So there are more ways that we could look at this relationship between the first Exodus and the new Exodus. But I want to just really, again, point out, on Holy Thursday, the Mass of the Lord's Supper on Holy Thursday, the first reading is Exodus 12, the discussion of the Passover liturgy. And what's happening? A spotless lamb is being sacrificed. Its flesh is being eaten, and its blood is being poured out. The blood marks salvation for those who partake in this rite. The new Passover, the new Exodus, is the Eucharist, and it's the Mass. And what are we celebrating at Mass? What we are receiving: the flesh of the Lamb of God, who is his Son. We are eating his body, and we are drinking his blood, and it is his body and blood that saves us, not from a tyrant in Egypt who's trying to enslave us, but from sin and death. And we have his body and blood not just once a year, like the Passover was celebrated, but every day or every week if you only go on Sundays. But the Mass is celebrated. It's there every day. It's always with us. We have that food for the journey from our earthly existence out of slavery and sin into the eternal promised land of heaven. Jesus is the mediator, and he's got his group of three, his group of 70, and his law is not just the commandments, which are still valid, but even something higher, the Beatitudes. And then there's an oath that is sworn in both cases. And I want to just read this briefly. This is the oath that is sworn in Exodus chapter 24 after the laws of the covenant are given. This is Exodus 24, verse 8. I'll back up one verse. "Then he," Moses, "took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people, and they said, 'All that the Lord has spoken we will do, and we will be obedient.' And Moses took the blood and threw it upon the people and said, 'Behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words.'" Now, fast forward to the Gospel of Matthew. I'm a Catholic, but I can find passages in the Bible. Matthew 26, this is the institution of the Last Supper. "As they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take this, eat. Take, eat, this is my body.' And he took a chalice, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, 'Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I shall not drink of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom.'" So One just kind of closing thing here, and we'll talk about the manna. So we have the Passover, which leads to then, right, the journey in which the manna is given every day. In John 6, which is a whole beautiful treatment on the Eucharist that we could spend so much more time on, this brief passage I want to share with you, just John 6, 41 through 51. The Jews then murmured at him, and because he said, "I am the bread which came down from heaven." They said, "Is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How does he now say, 'I have come down from heaven'?" Jesus answered them, "Do not murmur among yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught by God. Everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father except him who is from God. He has seen the Father. Truly I say to you, he who believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life." Now listen to this line. "Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. But this is the bread that came, which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I will give, which I shall give for the life of the world, is my flesh." So, the manna, which is connected with the Passover, Jesus is saying, the people that ate that died, but you who eat my body will live forever. So this is one of the many ways in which, if we take a look at the book of Exodus and see how it fits into the Lenten journey, we can see things a little bit more, I think a little bit more clearly. That Passover liturgy, which maybe you remember sort of, is really closely connected with Christ's sacrifice, and he's the one that gives us the clarity of the connection, because he celebrates the Last Supper, where the institution of the Eucharist occurs, in the context of the Passover. And in that meal, a lamb is being eaten. Its blood is being shed. There is a hyssop. Christ is given wine from a hyssop branch on the cross. His blood is marked on the cross, right? So the blood of his body is marked on the posts of the cross, and we eat his body and blood. All of these images wrapped up together, which is why, again, I'll go back to this. I'll close with this quote from the Catechism that I think is just really, really profound about the unity of the Passover and the Eucharist. 1340, we'll close with this. "By celebrating the Last Supper with his apostles in the course of the Passover meal, Jesus gave the Jewish Passover its definitive meaning. Jesus is passing over to his Father by his death and resurrection. The new Passover is anticipated in the supper and celebrated in the Eucharist, which fulfills the Jewish Passover and anticipates the final Passover of the church in the glory of the kingdom." So I hope you see a little bit better here why this passage in the book of Exodus is so important for us, and especially in our Lenten journey as we get closer to Easter. That day of Holy Thursday is where all of this comes really closely into focus. So I hope this can prepare you to enter more deeply into that liturgy, especially of Holy Thursday, but also to just understand salvation history a little bit better and how the sacraments are tied to that. So thanks for joining us, and God bless.